This is the Rich Eisen Show.
What was it called?
The Rich Eisen Show.
Bold loads it up. Franklin makes the catch!
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Drew Brees, five other guys went. Bo was kind of viewed wrongly.
When Sean Payton told me I really wanted Bo Nix next to or above all these other guys, like, I believe that.
Earlier on the show, NFL on Fox analyst Mark Sanchez. Coming up, Pro Football Hall of Famer Michael Irvin. ESPN senior writer Seth Wickersham, comedian Adam Ray, and now it's Rich Eisen.
That's right. We got a big jam-packed hour number two on this Thursday before Labor Day weekend show. Seth Wickersham is in our green room. He's going to come out and talk about this book, American Kings, a biography of the quarterback. Adam Ray is going to join us in studio. We'll have some laughs in hour number three. Your phone calls, they're all lit. We're going to take them. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial, but right now the playmaker's about to join us. Yeah. This, I know you guys have been talking, as is everybody Rich. Else, about this Netflix documentary series, America's Team, The Gambler and His Cowboys. It's available exclusively on Netflix, which means you can see it right here on Roku. Our friend, our buddy, the Hall of Famer, Michael Irvin. Michael Irvin. Give him the drop. Give him the drop, Mike. Give him the drop right off
How
the bat.
About them Cowboys?
Yeah! There you go. There you go. Just for you, Michael, right?
I got it. I like it, man. Rich, how you doing, my brother? How's everything going over there?
I am great. How are you doing? What's going
man,
on?
I'm doing well, Rich. I'm doing well, Rich. But, man, listen, I miss you. I miss the guys. I miss us. I really do, buddy.
Well, here's the thing, Michael. I miss us as well. And us can happen, you know, if you do a handful of things. Answer your phone. actually clear out your voicemail box that's always full so I can't leave a message. Those are two things. Just for starters. Us becomes much easier to be us if those two things occur, Michael.
And you're right, Rich. And I must clarify something. Yes. Now, you do understand.
Yes.
The mailbox being full, I would love to clear it out for you. Mm-hmm. But if I clear that out, my family will call me and clear out all my money. So I leave that box full.
I wasn't so thinking. I thought it was about me, Michael, you know. I forgot that you have one more I in your first and last name than I do. So my bad.
You understand, Rich. You know, when you have 16 brothers and sisters, everything that goes wrong, your money can fix. Your money can fix it. And they call you all the time. So, I've left that mailbox full for the last 20 years.
Now I got it. I won't ever bring that up again. That said, I can take
the text, Rich. I can take the
okay,
text. I'm talking about from the family. They said, I think I'm going to lose my house. I can deal with that. But if I hear him I don't know what to do. Your little niece is right here, and they're about to put us out. I'm going to write a check right back. You know what I'm saying? So I said,
mailbox is full. Sorry.
For a reason. For a reason.
That said, I imagine your phone must be blowing up over this documentary. People must be hitting you up all the time about what they're seeing from you and your story and the Cowboys story and the reminiscing and the history of this documentary is outstanding. You must be hearing a lot about it, I imagine.
Yeah, I am hearing a lot about it, Rich. And, you know, it's funny, I was talking to somebody. They said, Mike, why are you being, a lot of people don't want to talk about it. I said, well, they said, why are you opening up and talking about it? I said, well, first of all, it is history. And truth be told, you know, I'm saved. I'm a spiritual man. And God is always, God doesn't save you from stuff like that for you. He saves you to send you back in to get the rest of his. You see what I'm saying? So you got to talk about it to let the people know that are still in it, that you come through it and you can help them. So that's just part of the process.
Michael, I thought I knew everything about you or most everything about you. You had a hit put out on your life, Michael? Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yes, what? Yeah.
Tell that story, if you don't mind here, please. Michael, what happened?
Well, you know, one of the girls that were in the hotel room that night, the girl, Rochelle Smith, she was married to a cop, a police officer. And I didn't know that. And then I found out when she was coming over with my friend. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I guess, you know, he couldn't. Rich, he couldn't take it. He couldn't take it. And he said he didn't want this thing to go to trial. And he thought the only way that now it cannot go to trial is to take me out. So, yeah, he hired a hitman. But the hitman he hired was an undercover, thank God. And you know, we were in court.
Jeez.
And they came to get us out of court.
Man.
Yeah.
No.
Rich, they sent a documentary. He got 6 years. He got 2 years. Mm-hmm. He did 2 years. He was getting out of jail, and I was still on probation, right? I went to go see him secretly. Secretly, I went to go see him to apologize because I didn't know, you know, I went to apologize to him. And also, you know, when I went to go see Johnny and meet with him, he was crying. Oh, my God, I've never been so touched, man. He was crying. He said he'd been praying. Like, he said, my God, I've been praying. Like, I don't know what. I can't believe you're here. God told me he was going to send you here. And he was tapping on me, too, to go see him to apologize because I was wrong. I took a woman out of this man's house, and I was in a hotel doing things with her and a friend, things like that. So I went to apologize to him, man. Do you know when they found out that I went to apologize to Johnny Hernandez in jail, they called me in and they wanted to put me in jail because I was not supposed to be around any undesirables. I said to them, let me get this right. I said to them, you do know you guys are about to let him out. I'm still on probation. He did 2 years. I'm still on probation. You're about to let him out. I think it's smart I go apologize. Maybe next time it's not an undercover.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Michael.
Maybe next time it's not an undercover. And it would have, we didn't think about that. It's not your life. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, you know, then they decided, okay, you just can't do that again. You gotta let us know and all of that stuff. But I had a hell of a incredible meeting with Johnny in jail that day. You know, I called some people and they made sure they snuck me in and nobody saw me. But that was a hell of a moment.
Man, and this is the sort of raw stuff that's in this documentary that is kind of taking people aback a little bit. Obviously, it's years ago. Cowboys, you know the truth, you don't. You see stuff like that on as a log line for a documentary. You're like, yeah, really? I already know everything. And then you don't. Did you learn anything? Have you learned anything in watching this documentary that you didn't know, Michael?
But the things that I learned that I didn't know that I thought was fascinating to the core, you know, I like to try to find out what makes a man great, what makes a man tick in his journey. You heard me said a million times, I measure a man in distance travel. You know what I mean? Yep. Let me see your story, let me hear. And the Jerry Jones story, to find out that Jerry Jones' college thesis was on the broken system of the NFL, blew my mind. Because most people, I think he's just some country bumpkin that just landed on some money and stole the Dallas Cowboys. To know that he was that directed and that pointed, you know. Now, he's always been my great friend. I love him. But I think that should say something to people, you know, this man has been doing this and been after this all his life. I thought that was fascinating. Just fast. And he was ready to borrow money from Jimmy Hoffa. You ready to die for your dream. That's the kind of thing that impresses me.
Michael Irvin, Hall of Famer right here. Dear friend, America's Team, The Gambler, and his Cowboys, available for streaming exclusively on Netflix, which means you could see it right here through the Roku portal right here on The Rich Eisen Show. Last time I saw this background, you were on the left side of a screen on your YouTube channel. And on the right side of the screen was Jerry Jones characterizing a player who said, please talk to my agent about the things that you and I have just negotiated. He characterized that as being told to stick something where the sun doesn't shine. And that made some news, Michael, quite a bit. You were breaking some news. Look at you being a newsbreaker. What's happening here, Michael? Like, why would Jerry take a 26-year-old saying the conversations that we had, handshake or not, needs to be run through my agent as being told to stick it up his behind. Michael, what's up with that?
Well, I don't know that that's totally laid out correctly.
Okay, lay it out.
Remember, Rich, I was in a conversation. Mm-hmm. Even though I was interviewing Jared, I feel this was more like a conversation, not a search for information. Mm-hmm. As an interviewer and an interviewee,
yes.
when he said something like, "They told me to shut," I tried to send it to his agent. He didn't say he tried to send it to Mike. He said I tried to send it to them and his agent, and they told me to stick it up. Now, for me, I don't care, how you guys got to these numbers. I'm going to tell you, send them on over. And see, if I'm Michael Parsons, I'm going to tell my agent, you're looking at these numbers. Because whatever, if we don't sign the contract, then it's not a contract. But if you got some numbers on a paper that you believe you come to an agreement with, send those numbers, because it smooths down my negotiation. If you came up with $40 million a year. Well, we really want $43 million a year. And he said he offered the most guaranteed money. And so say you want 4 years and they're offering 5 years. So now I got a $40 million offer for 5 years in front of me. My goal is to get the 43 for four. If I take the deal, just send it and we'll start negotiating off of it. I'll send it, red line to 40, put a 43, red line to 5 years, put 4 years, and send it back. You're in the middle of a negotiation right now. That's all I'm saying. And I think that's what Michael Parsons should have been saying and should have made sure got done. Wait a minute, we gonna take that number? Because now if you don't take whatever they come up with, you want 43, and you're starting at zero. Now you're $43 million apart. I'm just saying, never tell the man with the bag of money, shove it up yours. I don't care what you got, send it over. That's all I said.
Well, okay. Let's take, no, hold on a second. Let's take that for what you just said.
Break it down.
Let's put that in the gospel, okay? Like, that's gospel.
Yeah.
If you're the representative and you're hearing that Jerry Jones has called your client into his office, or you've had a conversation with the client without him there, wouldn't you say something along the lines of, that is great, but you're negotiating with me. Let's talk about it that way. So let's just put it this way. At this point, what you just said, Jerry Jones is having a difficulty getting past. He clearly told you that on your YouTube channel in the interview.
Yeah.
And clearly, Micah's representation can't get to the table if the guy who won't come to the table with them, because he can't get past what you just mentioned, there's a loggerheads here. And this kid's going to have to get on a plane to Philadelphia next Wednesday or not.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't see, somebody's got to tell both sides,
right.
Move to each other.
And I'm with you, Rich.
I don't see that. So I nominate.
No.
You.
Oh, no. No, no, no.
Oh, yes.
No,
I nominate you. I nominate you because you can call the man with the bag, right?
Right.
You have that. And you, as an 88 clubber, can call somebody, divide that by eight. You can boil it down to the 11 clubber.
That double number.
I'm sure you've got his number. Hey, I understand you're pissed, but that's the guy with the bag. Just go in there and say, what needs to be said. Don't you want to get paid and stay here and with the star on the side of your helmet and everything? And you could talk about what that means decades later. I nominate you, Michael
Irvin. Right.
I second your nomination, Rich.
You second it, TJ?
I second your nomination.
Okay.
Right.
Yes.
And so did Jerry nominate me. And I would, and honestly, and talking with Michael and telling him, this is your life, is what I'm saying. Listen to this one. And this is what I say to Michael. Michael, this is your life. You have to understand when you're dealing in, and he does. He does. Michael's very smart. Very smart.
Yeah.
Very smart. But we understand that there are two things here. People always say, oh, this is just business. It's not personal. It is personal because it's your personal money, Michael Parson. Mm-hmm. It's your personal money. Mm-hmm. Don't let anybody mess with you about that. And the reality is all of it comes down to you. Now, Michael, I will say this to Michael, that there are so many added benefits to him being here in Dallas. And he knows his master plan. His master plan, Rich, I'm sure, is not just a few hundred million he's going to get from the Dallas Cowboys. He also has a podcast that he can make another $100 million on if he keeps running down the road he's running with that star on the side of his helmet. You see what I'm saying? So when you're doing business on the field, like he's been doing on the field, playing great, and he's doing business off the field, like he's been doing with his podcast, and you got to make sure that both entities are going to do great, and that means you got to play for the Dallas Cowboys to get it like you got it. So now you go back and say, let's make this as great as we can make it, but stop talking about me leaving. And I'm upset with Jerry because I wanted to make him, like I told you guys before, our legendary player. I thought Jerry should have given him a 10-year, $450 million deal. You know what I mean? Like they did with Patrick Mahomes and be able to go into that contract to get us some room to go and get someone else. You know, that's what I wanted to make Michael Parsons because he's that heart. He's that soul. He's an emotional player. Rich, I think this drains him way more than it does Dak Prescott or CeeDee Lamb, because I see him a lot like me, emotional, and he's an emotional player that gives it on the field, so he takes it very emotionally when it goes against him.
No, for sure. I agree, because with Dak and CeeDee, Michael, that felt more like a business negotiation.
It's just business, right?
This one is caught up in the, right. I thought we had a handshake agreement. I bought the Dallas Cowboys with a handshake agreement, and I'm an old school guy, and I even redid the handshake agreement because he wanted more money, and then we finally agreed to something, and then he says, talk to the agent, and the agent even doesn't want to look at the numbers, stick it up the ass, or whatever you said, right. Shove it here. Right. And so and he's got to be sitting there thinking, CeeDee and Dak didn't have to deal that, and CeeDee didn't even show up to camp. I showed up. I'm there. You know, they told me to be more of a leader, and I showed. And so, so to tell that 26-year-old, hey, kind of got to go into Jerry and say, you're sorry for reneging on the handshake deal and asking him to talk to the agent. He's probably sitting there going, who else in the NFL is being asked to do that? You know, with the numbers that I put up there.
Wait. We take these narratives and run. No. That's not the narrative, Michael? Yes, it is, because it's kind of, it's flawed.
Okay.
Because it's flawed in this sense. Jerry and Michael, it's Jerry and the agent. This is where this issue is. The agent is not receiving whatever Jerry's sending. I don't care if he's sending a note from his manager. I'm receiving it because we're negotiating. Do you understand what I'm saying? If he said he had a deal, that doesn't bother me. We're talking about the agent saying, I didn't talk to me first. This has a pecking order. I'm going to go through me first. And I'm telling you, I don't care about the egos. And I'm telling you, Michael has to tell these two, yeah. I don't care about your egos. All I care is about my money. Honey, go get it. That's it. And you got to, we're football players. Sometimes you got to step in and be the businessman. That's the part of it. And right now, it's Michael's life, and he has to be careful with it. I would hate for Michael to go play for $24 million this year when he had $159, $60 million, whatever the number.
I don't know if he's going to do it, Michael. I don't know. So, Kurt, what's your crystal ball? Next Thursday? I mean, next Wednesday?
Right.
Well, so how does it work? Wednesday morning, there'll be a bus to the charter, and he's going to be on it or not? Is that basically like how, because that's, I'm wondering when midnight's going to be. Last year, Dak was practicing, so he got on the plane to Cleveland. You know, that wasn't the question. CeeDee had already come back. this right. time around. Now the question is, the kid can play for $24 million or not. And there's going to be what, a bus from the Star going to the airport for the charter, and is he going to be on it or not? Right, like that's the question. Yeah. Next Wednesday,
that's the question. That's the decision.
Yes,
he has to make. That's the decision he has to make. Okay, do I go play for $24 million?
Yes.
Do I stay home, or do I tell my agent, get your butt on a phone call, or tell Jerry, or go to Jerry, let's get you guys together. And let's get everybody to talk. I don't care if I go sit in Jerry's office and say, hey, Jerry, let's call my agent together right now.
Man.
And start this conversation. You see what I mean? You got to get people back talking. Leaving these two not talking isn't doing any good for anybody. Now, if Michael signs late, if we get a chance to get Michael in late, the difference is in the CD or Dot is, You can put Michael in this first game, that like Coach talked about. You give him a few snaps. You just, hey man, listen,
go hunt.
We know you're not all the way ready, but you know how to get to the quarterback.
That's number
you see
five.
What I mean?
So yeah, go get five.
You can still use it. Go get five. That's all we need you to do. Don't worry about it. Right. But somebody got to put down the ego. Somebody got to put down the ego, and since Jerry has the money in the bag, I'm not going to wait on him to put down the ego. I'm going to help me and my agent, and we're going out for my money.
It's you.
We're going out for my money.
Because you were pushing back on the narrative I was talking about, that Micah's got to go apologize to Jerry. Fine, that might be too stringent a way of putting it, but you basically said Micah's got to go into the office and say, let's call the agent together, which means it's on him, which is, I guess, we're saying the same thing.
We got to apologize. I ain't got to come in and apologize. But I'm going to come on in here and say, let's go.
It's you. Yeah. Walk him in. Irv, walk him in.
Yeah, I'm going to get him. I'm going to go walk him in.
Walk him in. You walk him in. And then we'll hear about how Michael Irvin got this thing done for the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah. And you're the conquering hero, and they're all going to come on your show, and you're Michael freaking Irvin, and you know, and then the only problem is if Michael wants to leave you a message, he can't on your cell phone. That's the problem.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, you don't leave any messages. Don't leave any messages. I don't need any messages. But Rich, I am going to try. Rich, I'm going to do something.
There you go. I knew it. I want to inspire you.
No, I really am. Listen, Michael means too much to us.
Yeah.
Michael means too much to us, man. Yes. And ultimately, Michael is going. I know Michael's not going anywhere. He's going to be a Dallas Cowboy. And Jerry's, he's not that crazy. Sooner or later, and hopefully this week, because you know now we 1 week away right now.
This is it.
1 week
today,
away
tonight. Yes. Yeah. Michael, I love you, man. Thanks for the time.
All right, buddy.
Let's talk or text and then talk when you're free. That's the way it works. Love you. You take care of yourself.
Love you too, my brothers.
Michael Irvin. Check out his YouTube channel. Please do that. And then, of course, America's Team, The Gambler and His Cowboys, available streaming on Netflix right here on The Rich Eisen Show.
I love that line. Jerry's not that crazy.
All right. We'll take a break. And in the break, I'll text Michael Irvin and test our new communication system. Seth Wickersham, come on out of the green room. Let's talk about the biography of the quarterback. American Kings is his book. Even the safest drivers still encounter unsafe conditions, so it's important they do it in a safe vehicle. And Hyundai's offer available Class Executive Advanced Safety features to help keep you protected against the many challenges the road throws your way. Basically, in a Hyundai, you can drive as safely as possible and enjoy your journey in confidence and style. When you change lanes, signal, check for traffic, and enjoy the added safety of Hyundai's available blind spot view monitor. Constantly scan for dangers and take advantage of Hyundai's standard forward collision avoidance assist to help prevent accidents by alerting you of imminent collisions and automatically applying the brakes. Stay alert at all times and be thankful that Hyundai's standard driver attention warning system monitors your attention levels and can bring your focus back on the road. Safety is all about making the right decisions on the road and when selecting a vehicle. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for details.
You buy a pair of socks, that's two socks. You buy a pair of Bombas socks, that's four socks. Because one purchased is one donated. Socks are the number one most requested clothing item in homeless shelters. So when you buy a pair of super comfortable Bombas socks, you're also donating a pair. Bombas customers have powered over 150 million donations. So Bombas would like to thank you 150 million times. But we only have like 30 seconds. Go to bombas.com and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO at checkout.
It's a very 21st century thing to say, but it's always fun to meet people in person on the show or have them on the show in person that they don't exist in a little Zoom square.
Right.
Seth Wickersham is a whole human.
Like, yeah, he's a real person. Bottom,
hey. American Kings, a biography of the quarterback, Seth Wickersham's latest tome. Available wherever you get your books. Good to see you, sir. How are you?
I'm an actual human. Here I am.
You are a human. With flesh and blood, feet and legs.
Arms and legs.
That's amazing. Good to see you, man.
Great to see you, man.
Congrats on the book.
Thank you so much.
Why? Why this one?
Oh, man. So,
because you could write about pretty much anything.
Well,
why this?
Being a failed high school quarterback.
Really?
You know, Alaska's Uncle Rico.
My man.
I think that maybe led to me to have, you know, an automatic curiosity about it. But, you know, I've been at ESPN 25 years. And if you cover the NFL for ESPN, you cover quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And I still felt like there was a lot more to learn. And I wanted to understand it from every point of view, from high school to college to the NFL to retired Hall of Famer. And, you know, I wanted to write something that for anyone who had ever played quarterback, mythologized it, thought about it. And you know, that's what happened.
And a sense of competition, Chris, did that instill a sense of competition in you that he calls himself Alaska's Uncle Rico, where you think in your tenure in Alaska?
I played Little League in Alaska.
Okay.
High school football in Maine.
Okay,
so
you're Maine's Uncle Rico?
I guess.
Where in Alaska are you from?
Anchorage.
I did not know that.
Fantastic. I lived in Ketchikan for a long time.
No kidding. Did either of you see Russia from your house? Or neither of you?
Do we have to go there?
I'm sorry. I can. I'm not at ESPN yet. But congrats again on this book. And it's just, it is perfectly timed. I guess any quarterback about, any book about quarterbacks is perfectly timed. Certainly at the outset of an NFL playing season. Seth Wickersham is here on the program. Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. Seth Wickersham from ESPN, a biography of the quarterback. American Kings is available wherever you get your books right here on the Rich Eisen Show in person. And, you know, I'd love to ask you about the question I always have with Kurt Warner. It's something that just recently came up as well, with the fact that Dylan Gabriel is now the second string quarterback in Cleveland. Shedeur Sanders is third. How in the world do you develop a quarterback in this day and age in the National Football League? Certainly if he is not getting any reps as a starter, how does that happen right now?
You can't. And I think that, like, and Kurt helped me with the book, and we've talked a lot about this. And I mean, he's so smart.
Yeah.
And he's one of the few great quarterbacks who can talk about great quarterbacking. Like, he thinks about it at a really elevated and elite level. And I think that, like, there are few good and great quarterbacks, as we know. And I almost think there are fewer good and great coaches. And what you have is a ton of quarterbacks who go to these systemically bad situations. Sorry, the Jets, the Browns, the Titans, you know, the Jets.
We didn't have to go back for seconds, Seth, but I understand your point.
But, like, and, you know, I think that, like, what's happened is that, like, we're so quick to label these guys as busts, even if they go to poor situations where they're not the only failure at that position there. And the coaches are under stress because they have to figure out a way to save their jobs and they can't really develop a guy. And it's been an interesting thing. I didn't write about this in the book, but it's interesting to look at, like, there's an entire economy of quarterbacks now in the NFL that are kind of these retreads, you know, where they were looked at as failures. And they find another place to go. They learn from a really smart coach, like Baker did with Sean McVay, or Sam Darnold did with Kevin O'Connell and Kyle Shanahan, and Geno Smith. And they, you know, they can reemerge and have really productive careers, you know, if they can just hang on and survive and kind of weather that storm of confidence.
Well, it's nature versus nurture sometimes, totally. Right? It's how you're born into the league, how lucky mm-hmm. you are to be born into the league. And I think, for instance, J.J. McCarthy, okay, that's Justin Jefferson, and that's the quarterback whisperer of the moment, fresh off his Coach of the Year campaign in Kevin O'Connell. Thumbs up. Great defense as well. Great job. Then you've got, obviously, Sam Darnold's is a perfect example mm-hmm. of how he was born into the league. Zach Wilson's another one. So on and so forth. Nature versus nurture right there. But, you know, the question that the conversation I always have with Kurt on the subject matter, and this is why I think Kurt is so, as you point out, expert on the subject matter, he would not have been able to do what he did on the magic carpet ride for the St. Louis Rams if he didn't have NFL Europe or maybe the Arena League mm-hmm. or the obvious failure in Green Bay where he got cut. And the question is, I have for you, certainly since you and Don Van Natta know ownership in the NFL, having covered it for as long as you have, why does the NFL not put money into that? If yeah. I'm in the membership, there but for the grace of the injury gods go my team, where I'm down a quarterback two or three, and this guy's not ready, and the whole season gets flushed down the toilet, why isn't there more money put into a developmental league or more money put into developing quarterbacks in the National Football League? Why not? I mean,
the ownership group, the membership, as they sometimes call themselves,
yes, sir.
They move slow unless an automatic profit is at stake, in which case they move really, really quick. And so I don't think they see the need for it. I mean, you know, what makes the NFL unique is that, you know, these guys make a fortune each year, regardless of how good they are. And so people tune in and watch whether, you know, it's Justin Fields at quarterback or whether it's Matthew Stafford. And I think the most obvious answer is that even though I think intellectually they would understand the virtue of having a developmental league, they don't feel the huge necessity to do it because, you know, some of these guys winning isn't as important as you'd think it would be.
How about that? What an answer that was.
It's just true.
I don't even know how to follow up on something like that because it just strikes me again as, you know, the 49ers were very fortunate that Brock Purdy was as ready as he was when they finally had to get down to him, and other teams get down a quarterback three and the season's gone and mm-hmm. it's a miserable existence for their franchises. Seth Wickersham here on the Rich Eisen Show. How does it feel to have freaked out the entire city of Chicago with your book?
That was quite a ride. I'm not going to lie about that. You know, I think that like it goes back to what you were saying, though. Context matters. And, you know, having built an audience, you know, it's like the situation that you're brought into and what you do with it matters, even though people don't always, they're not quick to see that. And so I think that what Carl and Caleb Williams were looking at around the time that I visited with them and in the lead up to the draft is like, look, Chicago doesn't have a great record with quarterbacks. Carl Williams told me, you know, Chicago's where quarterbacks go to die. And is there a way to exert some agency over a future employer? And, you know, they thought about it and they looked at almost every kind of, they were, you know, trying to find lawyers and agents and anyone who had ideas that might be able to help them. At the end of the day, though, I think that Caleb was driving things. Caleb met with the Bears. You know, Ryan Pohl said, we're drafting you no matter what. Mm-hmm. He met with his teammates. He liked them. He liked Chicago and he liked the opportunity and he didn't want to do what Jack and John Elway did or with Archie and Eli Manning did, which is basically create an untenable situation. He didn't want to do it. And, you know, even though it took a year, they got what they wanted, which is like an innovative offensive mind in Ben Johnson, whose success is rooted in Caleb's success.
So you're saying, have you spoken to Carl and Caleb since then? Are they pleased with what is now in fact going on there?
I mean, I think that they're thrilled. I mean, I think that like, I haven't talked to Carl specifically about Ben Johnson, but like, I think Caleb, you know, we met to go through things, you know, some reporting in the book and stuff, and he had just been hired. I think that he had just come back mm-hmm. from the press conference. Caleb had just go back to work out in Florida. And, you know, I think he's ecstatic. And I think that, like, you know, when Brady retired for the final time, Caleb texted Carl, and he said, I need eight. And Carl was out on the East Coast, and he's like, eight what? Does he need like a Costco shipment? Like, do I need to DoorDash something? Like, what is he talking about? Right. And it was eight rings. You know, that's where he saw the bar. And, you know, that's what I think he wants. And you can't do it alone. The like we said, context matters.
Seth Wickersham here on the Rich Eisen Show. What did you learn about quarterbacking?
I think one of the most interesting things, you know, the book is a lot about American ambition and American fame. And I think that quarterback has gotten so big, and almost from the moment it was started and invented by Walter Camp in 1906, like I have some, it's not a history of the quarterback, but I have historical aspects. And like almost from that moment, it was defined and held in kind of a lofty status within the football world and even beyond. But like, you know, starting with really Bob Waterfield and Jane Russell. I mean, they might have been the country's first power couple in the 1940s. Here, the LA Rams moved from Cleveland in part because of Bob Waterfield's celebrity and Jane Russell's celebrity in 1945.
So Travis and Taylor aren't the first. They're the latest.
They're the prelude. And so I think that, like, at this point, it's gotten so big that when you look at the makeup you need to be a successful quarterback, it's not just about throwing. I think you need to find people who can weather the fame. And I think that, like, the people who do it really well, I think have that little piece of their personality where there's a hole that can't be filled, like similar to a politician or a pop star, where like they need to be at the center of their own ecosystem. They need to be receive constant adulation and love and encouragement. And
so
I think
the toughest position requires some sort of,
there's huge insecurity that goes
insecurity?
On with it. You'll read about it. But I mean,
the confidence you need to play quarterback
among the greats
is even born out of insecurity. As you're
I think
saying?
That even like among the greats, it's most acute. And I think that to me is really fascinating.
Brady's insecure. Like he's,
well, he did a roast less than a year after he retired. God, he sat at center stage, didn't he? Nobody forced him to do it.
We were there.
And it was a good roast.
By the way, and again, for somebody who's chronicled the Patriots, it was therapy.
It was.
And we talked about it.
Yeah.
That Brady's retirement ceremony that happened in New England a few weeks later wouldn't have been nearly as hunky-dory had there not been so much stuff gotten off people's chests, you know.
It's a little crazy because I remember, you know, I'm pretty sure we talked at the time, but you know, I did that big Patriot story in January of 18 about, you know, how the principals weren't getting along and maybe, you know, would they look for a way out? And you know, that was that story was, I mean, that one A took off and B, you know, came under a ton of scrutiny. And like I always thought, you know, it'll age well. And I think that, like, you know, Brady coming out and talking about how frustrated he was and how he wasn't going to return to New England that offseason unless something changed, and how it was kind of on Robert Kraft to make it work, especially in regards to like Alex Guerrero and his role. It was a fascinating time. And then to think what they did after that, you know, they kept winning. And it was just like, you know, it revealed so many things about like the nature of success and both the ego and the submersion of ego involved. Fascinating story.
Now, I think I might be also inaccurate by saying that everything got worked out by the roast. Did you hear Bill Belichick's recent comment about being a college coach, that there's no owner or owner's son, he said from the podium?
He did. Well,
how did that one hit you, Seth?
I think he said it to Ben Volen, right?
Is that what he said? I thought it was,
I think it was Boston Globe. Ben Volen?
Okay, pardon
but
me.
But like he, you know, like I said, those things were real. The things that, you know, I was writing about them. Tom Curran wrote about them to an extent. You know, but those things were real. And I think that, like, look, they push the bounds of achievement in football. And it's not surprising that you would start to have some cracks in those relationships. But I do think that the way things ended in New England between, you know, both Crafts and Bill, you know, I think that that's going to take a little bit more time to mend than it did with Brady, if it ever mends.
Does he feel that he's in college because of that fracture? Does he feel that there was some sort of, you know, nuking of his, you know, opportunity to get a job elsewhere in the NFL? I'm just wondering where Don, this comment might be coming from.
Don Van Natta and I and Jeremy Fowler wrote that story you know, that came out when he didn't get any jobs. And it looked like he was going to get the Falcons for a bid, and he didn't.
Right.
And we wrote that story about how, you know, Kraft had told the Falcons, you can't trust him. And now, did that cost him that job? I think it had some factor in it. And so, you know, we've seen it from Bill. He said it publicly. You know, he's gone back to the valuation of the Patriots before he got there and after he got there. And there's a lot of factors that go into that. But it is a fact that, that you know, that the value of that franchise has gone up quite a bit. And, you know, that he and Tom Brady and, you know, a bunch of those great players have helped, you know, the Kraft family quite a bit. And I think that, you know, from the Kraft family point of view, you know, he pissed off the greatest player ever who left, went out and won a Super Bowl. You know, and then he, you know, he struggled without him. And, you know, the record is what the record was. And especially offensively, they just were never really able. I think when Josh McDaniels was there and Mac Jones rookie year, they did well and they made the playoffs. But like after that, it never really clicked again.
So before I let you go here, knowing what you know about quarterbacking,
mm-hmm.
And just if you have to put your marker on any quarterback 25 and younger in the National Football League right now, knowing what you know about quarterbacking, makeups of quarterbacks, where they currently are, what they've done so far, you put your mark on this person to win multiple Super Bowls.
Multiple Super Bowls.
Multiple Super Bowls. You're like, I'm going to put my Seth Wickersham.
I'm going to go with JJ. How about that?
McCarthy?
Yeah.
Come on, don't just say that. You don't need
giving
to,
him what he wants.
You know, Kevin O'Connell told me.
You really would do that over Jaden Daniels, for instance. CJ Stroud is another.
Does Hurts count?
Hurts would. I mean, how old is Hurts?
Well, Hurts, you know, Hurts. Hurts would be up there. I think Hurts
already got one.
Yeah.
27.
He's a little outside of the age range. But I will say this. I met with Kevin O'Connell for the book. And yes. He, of course, was a great college quarterback. Four-year starter at San Diego State. And he got drafted by the Patriots. Thought he'd learn from Brady and then take that knowledge elsewhere. Yes. And, you know, his career essentially ended. And we talked a lot about those scars and how that informs how he coaches quarterbacks and looks at them. And one of the things that he did was when he was getting these tryouts with teams, he would try to make the wow throw, the John Elway throw, and, you know, knock the coaching staff over with mm-hmm. it. And he kept getting cut. And he realized later, he went back and watched all of Brady's game-winning drives in Super Bowls and big games, Montana's, Elway's. And what stood out was how mundane they were. Like, they looked like they were doing spring practice, even though the stakes couldn't have been higher. And he realized that, like, quarterbacking is really about, you know, doing the obvious thing that's right in front of you at the highest level you possibly can. And I think that, like, that to me, there's a reason why Caleb Williams really liked Kevin O'Connell, as, you know, I wrote about, is that, like, he just knows how to speak quarterback, and I think that they're going to be really successful.
So you're not just saying JJ McCarthy because I'm a Michigan guy.
But
you see what his talent is, and it's in the hands of Kevin O'Connell, and that is why you're saying what you're saying.
The theme of our segment, context matters.
So does this book, American Kings, a biography of the quarterback. Get it wherever your book can be acquired. Seth, you now know where the studio is.
I love it.
I now see that you're a whole human. Come anytime. You're here in Los Angeles, will you please?
Thanks, man.
Anytime. That's Seth Wickersham right here from ESPN. Get the book. All right, first one up, Brian Cranston. True or false, one of your first gigs was a Preparation H commercial. True or false?
Oh, come on. That is false. Oh, gosh.
Look at that photo. That's very Roy Scheider.
Isn't it?
Don't you think right there? If I could peg it.
Roy Scheider's really good.
What do you think?
Or what's that talk show host who had those big red glasses? What's her
Sally
name?
Jesse Raphael.
Sally Jesse Raphael.
Good call.
That was good.
Good call. Yeah.
So what happened? This was truly.
It's
one
called
first...
a job, Rich. I know you haven't been job hunting in a while. Oh, Mr. Employment, steady employment guy. Well, you're not. You know, actors. You gotta say yes. Well, this was, at least
yes.
I was a spokesperson. I wasn't afflicted by hemorrhoids.
You know what?
Well, in real life I am, afflicted. But not in. Yeah.
If I was afflicted, I would trust you to give me the right advice.
I would put that ointment on and go, here we go. Let's take care of this little problem.
I didn't mean the administering of the operation. Oh, I just meant the advice of, like, you should try.
I'm a full-service spokesperson. We don't just stop with talking about it. Come on.
Is that what you, why you brought your alcohol as
Yes,
well?
I bring my alcohol so I can soak my finger. It kills. It just kills everything out of there.
True or false, you did your own stunts on Malcolm in the Middle, including wearing a suit of 10,000 live bees.
That also is false. Okay. That never happened. Oh, God.
I keep on having the photo booth. Yes. But those are real?
Those are real. That's 10,000, I forget how many the count it was, but they would extract the pheromones from the queen, and they would put the droplets all over me wherever they wanted the bees to go.
Yes.
Then they'd open up the traveling chutes, and the bees would just start swarming, and they swarm forever. In order for them to stay off my face so the camera could recognize me,
yes,
you take a little of the, the bug spray, an off or whatever, and they put it all over my face there so that they would crawl, oh, no, I don't want that, and they'd get off it. But it was about 2 inches thick of bees. So I got stung once in the shoulder when they were getting them off. But once when I was doing that whole thing and I had to stand very still, one got between my legs.
Hey now.
And I got stung, and I said, oh, I think I got stung. Because when you're wearing bees, Rich, the chance of being stung is pretty high.
Yes.
You're wearing bees, for God's sake. So, but what I realized is that the sting of a bee is not really painful. It is mostly the shock that gets you. But when you're wearing bees and you get stung, it was literally, did I get stung? I did get stung, and the beekeeper comes over ready with a little credit card thing and a thing to scoop it out. He goes, where is it? I go, in my scrotum. And he goes, can't help you.
You're on your own.
That's exactly what he did. Can't help you.
Are there any more delightful humans than Bryan Cranston on planet Earth?
I was just going to say, is he the greatest guest we've ever had? He's up there, man.
Yeah. Oh, as delightful as they come. Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. Michael in New Jersey. Let's get RES Consulting here.
Michael?
What's up, Michael in New Jersey? What's going on?
Hey, Rich. How are you?
How can we help, Michael?
So, I am currently engaged to my beautiful fiance. And
congratulations. Thank you. Very nice. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. No applause. Just throw money, please. I'm going to have my bachelor party next month at, I'm a big New York Giants fan, and we're going to go to the week 4 LA Chargers game. And so my question to you guys, and it's for all of you, is number one, who's going to be my starting quarterback for the Giants that week for week 4? And number two, if you have to pick any regular season game to have your bachelor party at, which would you choose and why?
Okay. Russell Wilson will be the starter.
Agreed.
Barring injury. And number two, any game in Vegas, right? Because, I mean, once you're done, you can do. Where are you going to go after the game, man? I mean, you're going to go to
AC, but that's still 90 minutes.
That's too far. That's too far.
York.
Bachelor party at a football game, huh? That's an interesting choice. Michael?
I'm not a big
fan
of what you typically expect from bachelor parties.
All right.
What's weird about that? Guys loving football?
Yeah, okay. I like it.
That makes total sense to me, Michael.
Is your fiance into football at all?
Her football allegiance is contingent on the Taylor Swift situation.
meaning what? She's a Chiefs fan? Is that what you're saying? Now she's now a Chiefs fan.
She likes the Chiefs. She unfortunately likes Jason a little more, which means she leans a little more toward the Eagles.
Okay,
so we're working on it.
Week 3.
Opposites attract, baby. Michael in New Jersey. Opposites attract. Well done. Right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, there he goes.
The thing is,
hey, Rich, week 3, you get the Chiefs play the Giants. Maybe he should try to.
The Giants play in Vegas at the end of the year.
Let's go.
But he's clearly not one of those guys that wants to go to Vegas and, you know, do stupid stuff, and what happens there stays there.
I get it.
Steal Mike Tyson's line.
I'm just saying, if his girl likes the Chiefs, he can finagle something there.
Yeah.
During that
weekend. I don't know. I just think she's interested in Taylor Swift, which, you know, I totally understand.
Giants at the Chiefs in October.
Okay.
I get it.
Well, how would you have answered that question?
Whew, you know, I do like the things that go on in Las Vegas. So, you know, if I'm a Giants fan, maybe I push this to the end of the year, make it kind of a New Year's situation.
All right. Where was your bachelor party, Mike?
I didn't have one.
You didn't have one?
What?
No.
What do you mean no?
No. I had like a shotgun wedding, Rich. We went to like the jabroni place in wherever city it is here and got married like in front of
Yeah,
it was a joke.
So
the wedding was a joke. It was a joke for me.
And then the marriage? How would you term the marriage?
It was a joke.
Okay, very good.
And then the post was a joke. Getting thrown at me and almost just like killing me. That was a joke. Okay. It was actually funny as hell, but it was a joke.
I said those Emmys are heavy, man.
Which Emmy did she throw at you?
Great question.
My second one.
Which was for what?
I think it was an NFL on Fox.
Okay, very good.
I'm still laughing made up every for it. Time.
I'm glad
laugh
you, I'm
every
glad,
time
I'm glad you made up for it.
No, didn't.
You know, Bob Saget was at my bachelor party.
Where was yours, Rich?
Las Vegas, Nevada.
See? That's the
Las
place.
Vegas, Nevada. Yep. And that's all I'm going to have to say about that. What are you laughing about, Felly?
Felly
off in the distance.
Felly's back here. You love it.
I heard
it.
That one.
I love it, Felly. That's it.
Man, I've... We have a list of all of our fantasy team names.
Oh, they're good.
Should we go over this with Adam Ray and
I think we
three?
Should.
These Paul Rudd's going to join us next Tuesday pick our team name.
So these are the selects. So we need to cut this down to like 8 for Paul.
That's going to be tough.
Yeah. They're all really good.
You guys got a lot of good ones.
They're all really good.
Oh, my God.
So the rejected ones we'll post, and if people want to use them, they can use them.
Oh, you just added Alaska's Uncle Rico.
I got to say, great late entry by Seth Wickersham.
Alaska's Uncle Rico.
Yeah, because I think the window's got to close today so Smitch can get the avatars ready for next Tuesday, because this is a lot of work.
Yeah.
So, Smitch, we're going to get this information to you by the end of the day, before the end of the day. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of good ones on there.
Finger gunned by Costner.
It's pretty strong.
I mean, that's another
It's pretty strong.
It's just like he's counting us to break.
It's really strong.
This is good stuff. This is good stuff.
I am Michael Rosenbaum.
I am Tom Welling.
Welcome to Talkville,
where it's fun to talk about Smallville.
We're going to be talking to sometimes guest stars.
Are you liking the direction Lois is going in?
Yeah, because I'm getting more screen time.
It's good.
But mostly it's just me and Tom remembering.
I think we all feel like there was a scene missing here.
You got me, Tom.
Let's revisit it. Let's look at it.
See what we remember.
See what we remember.
I had never been around anything like that before. I mean, it was so fun.
Talkville.
Talkville.
I just had a flashback.
Follow and listen on your favorite platform.
Let's get into it.